All right. Hello, everyone. happy Sunday from here, from Pueblo, Colorado. As some of you may know, we've just returned home a couple of hours ago. We spent the weekend in Wyoming, and we had a really nice time there. If you watch Danielle, Jasmine, or me on Facebook, then you've probably seen our posts. We were posting a lot this weekend. All of y'all were on our minds as we were having such fun, so we were sharing live what we were doing. So we're home now and everybody's resting. Jasmine came home, went into her room, and I haven't really seen her since. Danielle and I did take Jamie out for a nice long, about a 3-mile walk. Now Danielle's off somewhere. And I'm here. So Cheryl has just been sharing from the 7 Steps to Awakening from her journal, and I heard a little bit from my journal as well. I am also going to be sharing from the 7 Steps to Awakening and my journal. I am going to begin tonight at quote number 179. That's where I am in my progression. As far as the teaching goes, not necessarily the writing. I'm up in around 425 in the writing. But as far as the sharing and pal talk, I'm ready for 179. So here is a link to number 179 for anyone who wants to follow along in the journal. And of course, as you all know, what I like to do before I go into it is just take a moment to be in silence. So if you all would join me in that, well, that would be great. So here we go. Amen. All right. So what I will do then is just continue kind of what Cheryl was doing, just in a different place. I will read first from the 7 Steps to Awakening, and then I will read from my journal. All right? So quote number 179 is from Step 2 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And the quotes specifically that I'm reading now come from another book called The Supreme Yoga. And this is what number 179 says. I was not silent because I could not answer, but because silence is the only answer to your question. Again, I was not silent because I could not answer, but because silence is the only answer to your question. All right, let's look at number 179 in the RDA journal. What is the purpose of inquiry and investigation? Is its purpose to lead to answers that satisfy the intellect? Or is its purpose to lead directly into silent, unknowing openness? And that's a pretty good question. I think that probably many of us, when we first started this spiritual path, certainly we had questions, and as we went further along this spiritual path, we came up with more questions. And I think that we probably thought that the purpose of asking questions was to get answers we could understand. That was our expectation, was to get answers that we could understand. And what we didn't understand then was that in seeking answers that we could understand, we were fully identified with the mind as who I am. Fully identified with the mind as who I am. And now I think that, you know, what we are all coming to see as we seem to be awakening together, I think we are coming to see that the mind is not who we are. And so probably most of us are in this place right now of being still somewhat attached to the mind, but not fully attached to the mind. And we have an understanding now that really what we are doing is letting go of any remaining attachment to the mind. That's what we're doing. And inquiry or investigation or asking questions is a part of the process, but the purpose of the questioning has changed. We are no longer asking questions in order to get answers that satisfy the intellectual mind with some type of understanding. We're actually now asking questions in order to see beyond the mind. That's really the purpose. In order to see beyond the mind. And a part of what we need to do in order to see beyond the mind is, of course, as I've already mentioned, is we have to let go of our current remaining attachment to the mind. And, you know, a great term that has been used many times in this room for the mind is the I know mind. Which means what we're really doing is we're questioning every belief and assumption that we still think we know. And the purpose of the question is to break that I think I know-ness. It's to break that. It's not to get more I think I know-ness, which may have been our purpose when we started. We want to acquire more I think I know-ness by knowing spirituality too. But now we realize that we're here to break the attachment to mind, which means break the I think I know-ness. And that is the purpose of inquiry and investigation. And when we break the I think I know-ness, we are going from really a closed state of thinking we know to an open state. And in an open state, grace can enter. It's not locked out. So the real purpose of questioning, inquiry and investigation, isn't to satisfy the mind with answers it can understand. It is to break our attachment to the mind. It is to see beyond the mind. It is to realize that what we have believed and what we have assumed is belief and assumption only, so that we can let go of all I think I know-ness and enter into that state of silent, unknowing openness. So again, number 179, what is the purpose of inquiry and investigation? Is its purpose to lead to answers that satisfy the intellect? Or is its purpose to lead directly into silent, unknowing openness? And what I'm going to do now is, well, actually what you can do with me first, if you're already in number 179, you can scroll down and on the left you'll see the number 180. You can click on that. And for those of you who have entered the room, since we've started, I'm going to give you a link to number 180 in the journal. And I am going to read number 180 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is on page 42. And this is what it says. All verbal statements, whether they are verbose or brief, whether their purport is subtle or transcendental, are limited by logic, by duality, and division. Again, all verbal statements, whether they are verbose or brief, whether their purport is subtle or transcendental, are limited by logic, by duality, and division. All right, let's just go to the RDA Seven Steps Journal, number 180. And what I wrote there was this. One cannot use words to teach another what the other cannot see for himself. All true teaching comes from within. And I know this to be true. I know it from a couple of different angles, three different angles. One, you know, now I can go back and read a statement in A Course in Miracles or, you know, even NTI. And I have understanding of that statement now that I did not at one time have. And it's not, of course, that the words have changed. The words were always clear. It's that some realizing has happened within. And as a result of the realizing happened within, the words now have a different meaning. And I'm sure that you all are aware of that too. So the words themselves did not teach. The words themselves pointed, but the awakening needed to happen within. The realizing needed to happen within. Another way that I know this, of course, is as a teacher. I realize that when I speak, there are those who understand clearly and perfectly what I say. They really do, because they've already have that scene within. Or sometimes the realization is occurring while I am speaking, but the realization is occurring within them. And then there are others who have not yet had those realizations, and they hear the same words, but they do not at all have the same meaning for them. There's a misunderstanding in the words. There's some kind of a block where they can't hear what is being said. So again, it's not in the words, it's in the inner realization. A teacher cannot truly teach. A teacher can only point. And then the other way that I know it's true is by some of the discussions that I observe, for example, in Facebook, when people appear to be disagreeing. And what I can often see is that they both have what I would call a partial understanding, but without either one of the two people having a complete understanding, they do not understand what their brother is saying. If either of the parties had a complete understanding, they would actually agree with the brother, because the brother is always at least partially correct. No one is ever completely wrong. Ever. So whenever two people are disagreeing, it is because they are coming from a partial point of view, and therefore they do not understand their brother at all. But a complete point of view, a full point of view, does understand where the brother is right. So, from these three different perspectives, again, what I have seen is that words themselves do not teach, words themselves do not communicate. All seeing happens from within. I would say the only true teacher is grace. The only true teacher is grace. It reminds me very much of what A Course in Miracles says. Something about, what's that question? How many teachers of God does it take to save the world? Isn't that the question? How many teachers of God does it take to save the world? And the answer is, of course, one. And using the language of A Course in Miracles, we would call that one teacher the Holy Spirit. Using the language that I just used, we would call that one teacher grace. But that always comes from a perspective that's better described as within than without. The words have meaning when the understanding comes from within. And until the understanding comes from within, the same words do not have meaning, right? So one cannot use words to teach another what the other cannot see for himself. All true teaching comes from within. All right, that's number 180. So if you are in the journal with me, you can scroll down and you'll see a little 181A on the left. You'll click on that to go to 181A. If you have just joined us and you would like to join us in the journal, I'm going to put a link in the room that will take you directly to number 181A. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Seven Steps to Awakening, this is a book that is given to us purely for the purpose of contemplation. It's nothing but a book of quotes, over 1,500 quotes. And the link that I'm giving you is to my journal, which is my written contemplations of the quotes. Now, number 181, as I contemplated it, I found two themes in my mind. And it just felt better, rather than trying to combine the two themes, it felt better for me to do a 181A and a 181B. That felt better to me. So I'm going to be reading this quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 181, and then we will look at both 181A and 181B. So here is the quote. "The Supreme Self is free from all notions. Notions give rise to objects, and when the notions are abandoned, the objects cease to be." Again, "The Supreme Self is free from all notions. Notions give rise to objects, and when the notions are abandoned, the objects cease to be." All right, if we look at the RDA Seven Steps Journal, number 181A. "If the mind is like the fertile jungle, self is like the clear blue sky. One is object filled, the other is objectless." And this, of course, came from the first sentence in the quote, which was, "The Supreme Self is free from all notions." And what I found in my own contemplation was two analogies coming up. One is a very fertile jungle. And if you think of a fertile jungle, you know, there is so much going on. Plant life, there are so many different kinds of plants. But then you have so many different kinds of animals, birds, you know, reptiles, insects, so much activity. You can see how that is like the mind, right? It has so much going on, so much activity. There's always something there to pay attention to focus on if you want to. There's not any real boredom in the mind except for the idea of boredom itself, which is just a plant, a certain plant that grows there, the boredom plant. But mind is like the fertile jungle. That's the first analogy that came to me. And then the second analogy came was that self is like the clear blue sky. Not a blue sky with clouds, but like the one that I woke up to in Wyoming this morning. When I looked out the window in Wyoming this morning, I saw nothing in the sky. Nothing. It was objectless. That's the self. So if the mind is like the fertile jungle, self is like the clear blue sky. One is object filled, the other is object less. So that's 181A. Why don't we scroll down and you'll see where you can click on 181B, and we'll go to the second part of this contemplation. I will post the link in the room for those who need it. 181B says, "Attention nourishes the jungle seedlings and makes them grow. If attention remains focused only on the clear blue sky, where is the jungle? So, again, if you're using the analogy, and if you just fill your mind, your attention, with the ideas of jungle, and you fill your attention by looking at, you know, all of the many different plants that are there, all of the many different kinds of animals that are there, and reptiles, and birds, and insects, and sounds, and textures, and activities. You know, your mind kind of, you know, you can just really feel yourself in the jungle, right? You can feel, it has a roof, right? The jungle has a canopy, it has a roof, it has a floor with all the trees and bushes. It almost has like walls. But then if you take your attention and you put it only on the blue sky, you see the jungle instantly disappears. It's not there. Either your attention is on the jungle with its ceiling and floor and walls and movement, or it's on the blue sky. And what this analogy is really saying is that if I focus my attention on those stories, on those thoughts, on those ideas, on those beliefs in my mind, then it's like having my attention focused on the jungle. I'm going to be very occupied, but there's going to be a ceiling and a floor and walls, which means I'm not going to be at all aware of the blue sky. It's completely hidden by the fullness of the jungle. But just as I can take my attention and put it on the jungle, I can also take my attention and put it on the blue sky. And people have different words for this blue sky. Some people call it awareness. That's a very popular word. The word that resonates for me most is actually just isness or beingness. Here-ness is a word that I've heard. Of course, capital S, self. You know, there are different words, but there's a way of being aware of it, even though it's not truly an it. There's a way of being aware of it, that in the awareness of it, everything else, to at least some degree, fades and disappears. If I am paying attention to my isness, I am not simultaneously worrying about my financial problems, if I think I have them. And in fact, what actually happens is there becomes a very clear awareness that there are no problems. There becomes a very clear awareness that everything is perfect, within the isness, there's this very clear feeling that all is well. That's the best way to say it. Not everything is perfect, because those words imply still have a form. You know, we use the word thing, it still has a form feel to it. All is well. I like those words better. Because there's the all is wellness actually has nothing to do with form. It has to do with having an awareness of the formlessness. Right? The something real. Now what's really interesting is that attention is just what I would call a tool. And I can use attention to make stronger within myself that which I value the most. Yeah, I like the way that is said. I can use attention to make stronger within myself, meaning my awareness, that which I value. So if I really value the world story, the personality story, then I can focus on all of those thoughts with my attention, and they will consume me. But if I value the formless isness, the beingness that has no attachment to this world, is in no way affected by this world, and I put my attention there, that becomes stronger in my awareness. So attention is a tool, and I use attention to bring stronger into my awareness that which I value. So the question then becomes, what do I value? And am I using attention just out of an old habit? And am I willing to, you know, maybe struggle a little bit, just like whenever you change a habit, am I willing to struggle a little bit that whenever I notice my attention has gone to the world, the personality, am I willing to shift it back to focus on just isness until the habit is no longer the strong habit it used to be, until the isness, the attention on the isness is more natural? And again, when there's attention on the isness, there is no perception of a problem. Just like when full attention is on the clear blue sky, there is no jungle. There's only sky. So attention nourishes the jungle seedlings and makes them grow. If attention remains focused only on the clear blue sky, where is the jungle? And number 181, again, the Seven Steps to Awakening said, the Supreme Self is free from all notions. Notions give rise to objects, and when the notions are abandoned, the objects cease to be. I posted a quote on my Facebook page just a little bit ago from a Facebook friend. Really don't know anything else about him. But he said something about using spirituality to solve problems is different than using spirituality to question the reality of the problem in the first place. I loved that he said that, and I posted that on my page. And to me, that's what this is about. If I'm using spirituality to solve problems, I have all of these problems in my life and I want spirituality to solve them, I actually still have my attention on the jungle. The jungle seedlings, which makes the jungle grow thicker. But if I'm using inquiry, as we saw earlier, to break my attachment to mind, then I'm learning to turn my attention to the clear blue sky. I'm learning to turn my attention to the nothingness. And within the nothingness, which is also isness, these are all just words, but within that, there are no problems, right? The problem ceased to be completely. So am I using spirituality to solve problems? Or am I using spirituality to question the reality of the problems? To see if there really are even any problems at all. Are they actually there? The Supreme Self is free from all notions. Notions give rise to objects, including problems. And when the notions are abandoned, the objects, including problems, cease to be. All right, let's scroll down if you're in the journal, and you can click on number 182. If you are not in the journal, I'm going to give you a link right now into the room. And if you want to, you can click on this link and join us in number 182. Oh, Cheryl, you asked me to repeat something. Sorry, I had my journal in front of the PAL Talk screen, so I'm not certain what you wanted me to repeat. I didn't see it at the time. Hopefully I did. The quote from my friend? Okay, I'll try it again. Now, I'm not saying the quote perfectly right now because I'm doing it by memory, and my memory is far from perfect. But anybody who wants to see the quote, you can go to my Facebook page. I just posted it about an hour ago. But he said something like, you are looking at my page. Do you want to take the mic and read it to us, Cheryl, since you're looking at my page? Go ahead. It's the one from Brian Adler. And here's the mic. Oh, no mic right now. Okay. Well, it's something like then. It's something like, are you using spirituality to solve problems, or are you using it to question the reality of problems? You're doing one or the other. Something like that was the quote. Okay, Cheryl has her hand up. Maybe she has a mic now. Here you go, Cheryl.
I put it back in the drawer, but I just pulled it up. Okay, it's by Brian Is. Using spirituality, whatever the means, in order to find a solution to a problem is very, very different than using it to question the reality of the problem in the first place. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for reading that to us. That's perfect. All right, so I gave you all the link to number 182. So what I'm going to do is read number 182 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, first. It's a little bit long. I'll read it a couple of times, of course. Here's the first reading. Oh, look, and someone has posted the Brian Adler quote right in the room. That's wonderful. Thank you. Here we are, number 182. Do not fall into the net of duality and non-duality, etc. All such controversy and polemics only lead to sorrow and despair. When one pursues the unreal or impermanent, there is sorrow. When the conditioning of consciousness drops away, there is no sorrow, even as in sleep there is no sorrow. The consciousness that abandons conditioning realizes its unconditioned nature. That is liberation. All right, although I don't think there are any new ideas in this, it was quite long, so I will read this one more time. Do not fall into the net of duality and non-duality, etc. All such controversy and polemics only lead to sorrow and despair. When one pursues the unreal or impermanent, there is sorrow. When the conditioning of consciousness drops away, there is no sorrow, even as in sleep there is no sorrow. The consciousness that abandons conditioning realizes its unconditioned nature. That is liberation. All right, let's look at number 182 in the journal. The desire to be right runs deep. Even as teachings about dropping I know and the desire to be right are read and reread day after day, the desire to be right will rise unnoticed, snatch attention, and reign victorious again. This is what is meant by conditioning. Conditioning is not overcome without attention and effort. The desire to be free of long-held and highly valued habits must be present. With attentive effort and heart desire, conditioning can be undone. It is worth the little effort you are asked to put forth. So one thing that I know that we all see, because it does run deep in us and in our spiritual community, is that desire to be right. And so what we'll see is somebody will make a post, you know, maybe they'll make a post that says the Supreme Self is free from all notions, right? The Supreme Self is free from all notions. And then somebody else will post, that itself is a notion. And then pretty soon there's 64 comments. Yeah, that's what this is talking about, okay? Why do we have to put our 2 cents in there? Because we want to be right. Why do we want to be right? Because that keeps the I know mind feeling well, puffed up, but feeling real, feeling like me. So, because of the teaching in the Seven Steps to Awakening, I'm laughing at Lisa, she says, I'm going to shut down Facebook. because of the teaching in the seven steps to awakening, I do my best not to participate in discussions anymore. I still post, but once I post, unless there's a reasonable question or a reasonable comment that I feel just to go ahead and respond to, for the most part, I post and I leave it be. Which means if I post and people come and they state an opposite, I allow the opposite just to stay there. If people come and they in some way tell me that I'm wrong or that my seeing is not mature enough, one day I will see beyond that, I leave that there. I just let whatever happens, because that seems important, because of because of the knowing that what wants to be right, what wants to be perceived as right, is the ego. It's interesting, actually, if you think about it, because we all know this. I'm not telling you anything that that you don't know. Hi, Jamie. We all know this, but even though we know it, there are a lot of discussions. And I think, again, that's why this number 182 says this is what is meant by conditioning. We're so conditioned to want to be right. We're so conditioned to want to correct others. We're so conditioned to want to show that we know more, that we have a higher way of seeing. I especially love it in a giggling, joking type of way when people come back saying, "No, I know I'm right because I'm enlightened." It's like, what's enlightened? What's enlightened? What is in this discussion saying, "No, I know I'm right because I'm enlightened"? It seems to me that enlightened seeing knows that everything is perfect, that everyone is seen perfectly today for where they are in their own ascension of the stairway to heaven or their own awakening. You know, if you imagine that awakening is like hiking up a mountain, well, then those people who are just beginning the hike, just at the trailhead, are going to see one way. They're going to see one thing. People who are 1,000 feet up the mountain are going to see another view. People who are 2,000 feet up the mountain are going to see another view, all the way up to the top of a 14,000-foot mountain. But no one is wrong in how they see for where they're at. And the enlightened person who is at the top of the mountain and has already walked the entire trail knows this. So when the seer hears one person state a clarity based on where they're at, the seer says yes. And when another person states the clarity based on where they're at, the seer says yes. Because the seer knows that they're all right. The seer does not argue, and the seer certainly does not say, "But I'm enlightened, I know." That is a limited point of view, therefore it's not coming from the top of the mountain. It's still coming from somewhere on the trail, thinking that spot on the trail is the top. You've heard of false peaks. If you ever hike, you know there are false peaks. It looks like the peak until you arrive there, and then you go, "Oh, geez, there's more." Well, these people are approaching a false peak, I guess, and they think it's the top of the mountain. As they're saying, "No, no, 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 I know because I'm here." But they couldn't possibly be, because they would then know that everyone is right. So if everyone is right, based on where they are right now, based on how they see and from their spot on the trail, what in me wants to say, no, I'm more right? How could I be more right than right? It doesn't even make sense. So anything in me that wants to be more right than somebody else is simply ego. It has to be. So I'm going to read from the book again, and then I'll read from the journal again. First, from the book, number 182, do not fall into the net of duality and non-duality, etc. All such controversy and polemics only lead to sorrow and despair. When one pursues the unreal or impermanent, there is sorrow. When the conditioning of consciousness drops away, there is no sorrow, even as in sleep there is no sorrow. The consciousness that abandons conditioning realizes its unconditioned nature. That is liberation. And from the journal, the desire to be right runs deep. Even as teachings about dropping I know and the desire to be right are read and reread day after day, the desire to be right will rise unnoticed, snatch attention, and reign victorious again. This is what is meant by conditioning. Conditioning is not overcome without attention and effort. The desire to be free of long-held and highly valued habits must be present. With attentive effort and heart desire, conditioning can be undone. It is worth the little effort you are asked to put forth. You know, and my experience again is, you know, when a post is made and then somebody, you know, says something else, something different, the desire to explain myself, the desire to say, if you were really enlightened, you wouldn't say that, the desire to respond in some way shows up. But then I can just let that pass. I do not need to give in to that desire, because to give in to that desire is to give in to conditioning, and to give in to conditioning is to keep it strong. To just let it pass is to let that conditioning start to weaken, you know, let the habit begin to die. And if that's what I want, if that's my heart desire, then with some attentive effort that can be done. But it does require attentive effort. Without the attentive effort, the habit will be just to go ahead and, you know, say again, well, you're just not understanding what I'm saying, blah, 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 you know. I don't even have interest in that anymore. So there you go. Write whatever you want on my posts. Have fun. But maybe more importantly, you should actually just watch that desire in you. You know, what in you would want to disagree with my post? Isn't it the same thing? And do you want to strengthen that in you, or would you rather let it die too? Maybe that's the better way to look at it. All right. Let's scroll down and click on number 183. I clicked on it. Oh, there we go. And the first nothing happened. But then something did. And I'm going to give a link because I notice people just keep popping into the room. So here is number 183 from the journal. But first I'm going to read number 183 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I'm at the top of page 43. And this is it. The total abandonment of all notions or ideas is liberation. And such an abandonment is possible when the pursuit of pleasure is abandoned. Again, the total abandonment of all notions or ideas is liberation. And such an abandonment is possible when the pursuit of pleasure is abandoned. So let's look at number 183 in the journal. You can not pay attention to what is there. This you know how to do. And, you know, proof of that is we can all be focused on the TV and not hear our living partner speaking to us, right? You know, we're very good at not paying attention to something that's present. We all know how to do that. We all do that all the time. You know, if the living partner is saying something that we're very interested in, we may be paying attention to them, and as a result, not hearing the TV, even though it's still on, right? So you can not pay attention to what is there. We all know how to do that. So why do you pay attention to your thoughts? Because you allow them to interest you. Turn the attention of inquiry and investigation toward interest. Why does this thought story interest you? Is it true that this interest is your highest interest? Is there something that interests you more? Someplace else where you'd rather place attention? Let attention naturally follow true interest, but use inquiry and investigation to make sure imposter interests are not capturing the current gaze of attention. So, what we saw tonight is the purpose of inquiry or investigation or questioning is not to satisfy the intellectual mind with understanding. In fact, what we saw tonight is the purpose of inquiry or investigation or questioning is to actually break our attachment to the thinking mind, to the intellectual mind, break our identity with that mind, right? That's the real purpose. And so what this is saying is, if I'm paying attention to some story in my mind, and it could be any story at all, you know, what's popping into my mind now is, you know, today we had an interesting thing in a parking lot. We were about to pull into a parking spot, and there was a guy coming. It's kind of hard without paper to draw to describe this for you, but he wasn't even exactly on the same road as where the parking spot was. He was like, I'll just say, cutting across the parking lot. It's not a perfect image of what happened, but it's the best way to give you an idea without being able to draw you a picture. So he wasn't even on the lane that would turn into the parking lot. He was kind of like cutting across. He had his eyes obviously on that spot, I guess, and he was heading for it, but he wasn't even there. And we turned into it because we were there, and that's what we were planning to do. And he became very upset. Now, this was a small thing, and it was over very quickly. It's not a big deal at all. But let's imagine that for some reason for me it was not a small thing. Let's imagine that the rest of the day I kept returning to the thoughts of him upset. Maybe I'm returning to the thoughts of him upset, thinking what a jerk he was. Maybe I'm returning to the thoughts of him being upset in some sort of guilt, like, oh, I should have noticed, even though, you know, he was, you know, over there coming this way, I should have somehow noticed that he wanted this spot and I should not have turned in there. You know, in some way, if my mind is going back to that story, well, then my interest is there for some reason. My interest is there. So what this is saying is, turn your inquiry on your interest. Why does this story interest me? Why does this story interest me? You know, maybe if I'm coming at it from the guilt point of view, maybe what I will discover is that actually, not that it's logical, but the idea of my own guilt really captures my attention. It makes me feel bad, but it really captures my attention. Whenever I think that I'm guilty, my mind will stay with whatever the last guilt story was, whatever the last guilt event was. Or maybe, you know, for me it's more of a projection thing. Maybe I really like thinking about what a jerk that guy was. Maybe somehow that makes me feel better then. You know, which of course is a defense mechanism. Why am I so interested in this story? And then maybe after a little bit of seeing, a little bit of clarity about why I keep going back to the story, then maybe the next question is, well, is that really my interest? I mean, am I truly interested in focusing on the idea of my guilt? Is that what I want to do? Or am I truly interested in, you know, seeing everyone as jerks, as seeing myself maybe better than everyone? Is this what I want to do with my mind and my attention? And maybe just through inquiry, just through asking questions, not analysis, there's a difference between inquiry and analysis. It's just asking and having the answers kind of appear. Maybe just through this inquiry, I'll start to see that this really isn't my interest. And you see, that's what breaks the attachment. Then when the story comes back and I see, oh, this is just me focusing on the idea that I'm guilty again, and this is just not really what I want anymore. I don't want to see myself that way anymore. Then maybe I can then, out of clarity, start to make the decision to turn my attention to something else. And by something else, I mean my mantra, my course workbook lesson. You know, what I do often is I do post in Facebook, and I will turn my attention to my own posts. Because I feel that if I posted it, that meant I wanted my attention there. That's something I wanted to spend more time with. So I'll turn my attention to my post. Something that interests me more. So you see, the purpose of asking these questions, again, it's not analysis. It's to break that attachment. So you can not pay attention to what is there. This you know how to do. So why do you pay attention to your thoughts? Because you allow them to interest you. Turn the attention of inquiry and investigation toward interest. Why does this thought story interest you? Is it true that this interest is your highest interest? Is there something that interests you more, someplace else where you'd rather place attention? Let attention naturally follow true interest, but use inquiry and investigation to make sure imposter interests are not capturing the current gaze of attention. All right. Oh, Lisa was asking if the guy had Massachusetts plates. I didn't look at his plates, but when he got out of his car and he was, going into there was a diner there. He was going into the diner and walking still quite huffily. He was very angry. He was very well dressed, to be honest. My thought, and of course this is imagination. I don't know that it's true. But my thought was that he was meeting someone for breakfast, someone that he cared enough to dress up very well for, and maybe was running late. That was my thought. I don't know, of course, why he was so upset or anything, but he was very well dressed. So maybe it had something to do with that, but who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Okay. So we have 6 minutes left, according to my clock, which means we probably have time for at least one more. Hey, Rev Tony. I don't know who's following me. Maybe you are, because I've never seen you in the room before. Are you teaching next, Rev Tony? Oh, yeah, Lisa's saying maybe he had to go potty. Not you, Rev Tony, but the guy I was just telling a story about. We just did number 183. So we're going to go to number 184. So you can scroll down if you're in the journal, and you'll see number 184 on the left, and you can click on that. If you are not in the journal and you would like to join us in the journal, I am giving you a link to number 184 right there. Number 184 says, to rest content. Oops, Jamie thinks I've been teaching long enough. She wants me to quit. But Jamie, can you wait 5 more minutes? 5 minutes, okay? All right, number 184. To rest content with the knowledge gained from the scriptures, considering oneself to be enlightened, is like the vain imagination of the born blind. I will read that again. To rest content with the knowledge gained from the scriptures, considering oneself to be enlightened, is like the vain imagination of the born blind. All right, let's look at number 184 in the RDA journal. This is the link that I gave you. Enlightenment is an idea born in the mind. Enlightenment does not exist before mind. Therefore, it is not real. One can become an expert on the teachings. One can imagine himself into the highest experience of mind. However, even the highest experience of mind is not before mind. Do not be fooled by self-arisen ideas of enlightenment. Continue to rest from mind's ideas. Now, those of you, I know there are people in the room who are not aware of my work with the Seven Steps Journal, but there are also people in the room who are very much aware of it. And those of you who are aware of it know that one thing the Seven Steps Journal has talked about is that there is a virus of what we could call false enlightenment right now. And this virus of false enlightenment comes, first of all, from the desire to be enlightened. And then the mind, the thinking mind, the intellectual mind, not understanding that it can't be enlightened. It thinks that it can. We, fully identified with it, think that we can be enlightened. And so the mind then, when it listens to descriptions of enlightenment or reads descriptions of enlightenment, it begins to imagine itself into that direction. And at some point, maybe there's an awesome mystical experience, or maybe there really is some kind of a true shift that happens, but it is not beyond mind. Mind is still very present. And mind then takes that mystical experience or that awesome shift and says, this is it. This is it. I am enlightened. And unfortunately, from what I understand from within, I don't know anything statistically in the world, so I'm not talking from that point of view. I'm talking about from my inner teacher. Unfortunately, this happens fairly often. This idea, I am enlightened. And the caution is, when that idea shows up, not to listen to it. Just like we didn't listen to a lot of other ideas in order to get to this point, right? In order to get to the point of whatever that shift was, there were a lot of ideas that were not listened to. So don't listen to this one too. It kind of reminds me of the story of the yogini, which is a story that Muji tells that goes along with his painting, which Cheryl Valentine has given to me. And the story is, hush, Cheryl. The story is, of course, you know, I have to give the brief version, plus my memory sucks. I couldn't give the real version anyway. But she's in meditation and she sees something incredible, where a lot of people may have thought that they have achieved because she saw that. But she understands that she is seeing that. And she has no response to it, no interest in it, and she stays just in the meditation. And this happens several times, right? I've told this story earlier before, but I just don't remember the details. But she is never moved or excited by what some people would call achievements in meditation. And by never being moved or excited by these apparent achievements, she receives true seeing, for lack of better words. And another very quick story, Ramana Maharshi had a disciple who was fairly well along the path, and he said that he wanted to go and just sit in a cave for a long time, that that's what he felt he needed to do, and Ramana told him to go. And after many years, he came back very excited because he had seen a vision of a temple on fire. And shortly after that, there was a temple that burned. And so because he had achieved these powers, he thought he had achieved something. And Ramana just asked him, why did he move from the cave? The Course in Miracles also points to the fact that these powers, although they may show up, they are not it. And Cheryl is giving you the link to the yogini thing. There you go. Read Muji's version of it. It's much better than my horrible telling of the story. It's time for me to go. The point is, the idea I am enlightened is just a thought. Do not be tricked. And that is the end. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.